This is Radio Free Thinker, and we're about to spread some blasphemous rumors. Well, due to technical difficulties, which I will blame the gremlins of the electronic world, Blasphemy Rumors will be brought to you at a future episode.
Yes, well, welcome to Radio Free Thinker on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, your freethinking historian.
And I'm Don, the political science philosopher. This day in history, we have a few interesting things. I think the most interesting recently, because of the apparent moon thing that's been going on recently, was in 1958, Dwight D. Eisenhower signed into law the National Aeronautics and Space Act, which created NASA. Ain't that cool?
That's pretty cool. What does NASA do exactly?
Well, also on this day, one of the interesting things, part of the Viking program, Viking 1 took some pictures of Mars. And one of the pictures is the famous Face of Mars, Face on Mars, which was released July 31st, so released this week, in 1976. Something I think we might do an episode on later about space hoaxes and stuff.
So you're saying it's not actually a face on Mars?
Well, it all depends on who you talk to. I mean, some people think there are ancient Martians who sat there and carved this giant face into the planet so that aliens, like our spaceship going by, could look down and say, oh, there are Martians down there.
So it's like intergalactic graffiti.
Exactly. Or, and I mean, you can believe this if you want, if you're one of these naysayers, it's a natural geological formation that when you take a picture of in a certain way with a certain reflection of light and that, kind of looks like a face if you're looking for a face.
So a little pareidolia going on there.
Yeah, pareidolia. Yeah, hmm. It's so. So yeah, that also, and also in this this day in history, sadly, in 2004, Francis Crick died. Francis Crick, for those who do not know, is famous for discovering DNA along with a few other co-founders. He got a Nobel Prize.
He didn't invent DNA. He found it.
Well, natural design, he created DNA. No, he discovered it. Up until that point, everyone knew there was something. Everyone who believes in science knew there was something that was the blueprint for life. But they didn't know exactly what it was. And he discovered that it was DNA. And more importantly, he discovered the design of it. They knew there was kind of this white goo, but they didn't know exactly how it worked. So him, along with a few other ones, I think Watt and another person, were giving the prize for it.
Excellent. Well, that's very good work.
Also on this day in history, and this is the last one, sorry folks, in this day in history, my father was born. So I'd like to give a little shout out to Dad. Hi Dad, thanks for everything, happy birthday.
So that's your mom and your dad. Do you have any cousins, aunts, uncles?
No, it's one of those great cosmic fates that somehow both my parents were born about a week apart.
Oh, well, how nice for them.
He says that with love, Dad.
Yes. Well, why don't we go on to an email before we move on? And this email comes from Jesse, and he writes, "Hey guys, I listened to the last podcast Tuesday and heard you mention the psychic show that took place on Wednesday. I don't know if any of you were able to check it out, but I happened to be there with a couple of my skeptical friends." And Jesse provides a link to a blog entry that they wrote about visiting the psychic fair. And I'm just going to read a little bit of this blog post. "It's hard to summarize the woo, but we heard it all. The secret, what the beep do we know, energy, spiritual energy, of a kind that can neither be defined nor measured. You need to believe, quantum mechanics, past lives, science doesn't know everything, science always changes its mind. Everything you need to know is already inside you. Personal testimony is evidence. Energy causes all illness and cure all illness." So it sounds like they did a pretty good report there on skepticism, in the wild allegations that go on at these psychic fairs.
Yes, no, I remember reading that. And yeah, it was so bizarre, all the different... I think woo-woo is a... I don't know if that's the technical term for it, but I'm one of the things we mentioned in the last episode, and they mentioned their toe reading was...
Yeah, that sounds really... I mean, that, even that's reaching. I have to say, even for like psychics, they have to be going, okay, we're reaching on this one.
True.
We're really running out of material.
Although some of them, you know, I think it is so almost, no, not criminal, but shows, things like What the Bleep Do We Know and all that, which takes ideas like quantum mechanics, which people, even scientists, you know, sit there and say, if you understand quantum mechanics, you don't understand quantum mechanics. It's one of those things that's very anti-intuitive. And they take aspects of that the little tidbits, and they manipulate it and make it into something that they're not. So one of the things about quantum mechanics is a thing called indeterminism, whereas something can be in more than one state, right?
Yeah.
And they take that saying, well, that means we know the minds of everyone. Everyone's minds are somehow connected. Well, that's not what the science is. If you understand the science, that's not what it says. But they take the words quantum and, you know, indeterminacy and superposition and all that and turn it into some sort of mystical belief.
Well, one thing I noticed is that they take a lot of sound bites from a lot of, like, documentaries about quantum mechanics and spin them around to make it sound like scientists are just sort of making it up as they go. I even remember that when Roger Ebert, the famous film critic, reviewed that movie, he got tons of letters from actual physicists saying, this is complete BS, we know what's going on. Quantum mechanics is complicated, but it's not, you know, made up as you go. It's a real science.
And the funny thing is, you know, and I think this helps lead to what is some of the quackery, even though there is real science behind the root idea, is if you go back 100 years or whatever ago, right, the big thing was electricity or radiation. And before that, there were certain chemicals like oxygen or carbonation. And all there were all these miracle cures that if you had an electric current, the essence of the life force passed through you, it rejuvenates you and all that. And they took a little bit of real science that there is electrical currents that go through the body. It's bioelectrical. And they add this whole superstition, this whole dogma on top of it, so they can usually peddle wares. I mean, some of it might be genuine belief in the woo-woo, but a lot of it, and again, especially when you go to an exhibition show like this, everyone there is hawking something. There is a vested interest in them to befuddle you. I remember one of the things that was in the blog report was about a psychic reader who was very careful not to promise anything, or at least this is what the blogger said, that she was actually quite amazed at how she could dance around almost promising you something without actually making any hardcore beliefs. And I mean, for her, it's a good way, you know, you want to entice people, you want to get them in, and once you're a psychic reader, you say, hey, $20 and I'll tell you what might happen in the future.
It's also a good way to protect yourself from a lawsuit once you're proven wrong.
Exactly.
We should mention that there's actually another festival called the Body, Soul, and Spirit Expo, which is happening in October. And, you know, I think it's a safe bet that Radio Free Thinker might show up for that.
You know, actually, I think it'd be a great bet. And actually, I have a great idea for all our skeptic friends out there, and I like to spread that out in the community, is an idea that if a whole bunch of us got together in the skeptic community and pooled together a little bit of money to actually get a table at this conference, the tables themselves are about $600. It's not cheap. Big money is being made by the organizers of the conference. But it'd be so interesting to have in the pool of this woo-woo, this
lone island of skepticism.
Lone island of reason in this, right? And give the people who go there an opportunity to bounce off. You know, if they go to this one thing who's a toe reader, and they can come to our booth and say, well, is there any basis in this at all? And we can say, well, let me tell you. Because there might actually be, to be fair, to be skeptical.
Sure.
There may be people who are going to go to this who are body manipulators or something, right? Sort of like chiropractic, but the real kind that will actually maybe help your alignment of your spine, or body therapists who will help you. I mean, we're not going to say everyone there is going to be woo-woo.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a lot, and it'll be really interesting to do that. Plus, and I think this idea, wonderful, if you have a table, then you can apply to be one of the lecturers and give a lecture. And somehow giving a skeptic lecture at a show like this, I don't know, it just turns my crank.
Well, let's hopefully that will come to pass. And if anyone out there has any comments about this or wishes to email us, please do so at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. Well, let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back after this.
Hey, this is Clem from White Cowbell, Oklahoma. Baby, don't touch that dial, because you got it locked on C-I-T-R.
You have made the move out to Los Angeles. First of all, have you found a place to live yet? Are you looking for a place to live? What kind of place are you looking for?
I'm looking for an apartment that will reflect a balance between my own energy and spirituality and that of the city I live in.
So we're talking like a condo, one bedroom, two bedroom?
Irrelevant.
Kitchenette or a full kitchen?
I like to cook and I have skills in doing so. I need a kitchen that will allow me to express my creativity adequately.
Okay, so what's the spirituality of Los Angeles?
Well, it's still new to me, but I encounter sun and air and wind.
Yeah, because there's no air in New York, or wind, or sun. There are all those things everywhere. What, are you coming from Pluto? Have you said this to a realtor? Have you spouted this crap to a realtor?
No.
Okay, a realtor's going to rip your head off, reach inside your throat wound, pull your lungs out through your throat, and tie them around the little nub of your vertebrae. Do you want to be in a modern kind of space, or can it be old-fashioned?
Irrelevant.
What? I keep saying that. That's rude. I keep saying irrelevant. You know, it's not nice.
Life is a flow of energy. You can try to do your own thing, but in the end, the energy will catch up with you and take you where it needs to
go. I'm going to suffocate you with my hands. I'm going to put my hands around your throat and squeeze. No air will get to your brain. In 2 minutes, you'll be dead.
You either go with the wave or you struggle fruitlessly against it.
So is this all from Karate Kid 2? Where do you get this? Where does this stuff come from?
These are original thoughts.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. And that was a short clip from The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien. And Conan was expressing some mutual skeptically opinions on spiritual energy.
I think if anyone's seen that clip too, you'd notice that the guy he's talking to, and I can't remember his name because he's one of the minor guys in the episode, but he does such a classic deadpan. I mean, it's bad acting, but I mean, it is so deadpan.
Yeah, he's really good. It's a good show. I like it.
Well, you know, and just to attest to everyone how much, if you were in the studio here, you would have seen Ethan, who almost fell off his chair. He was laughing so hard, and he's heard this clip several times before.
I like Conan O'Brien. I just got to know on the record, too, that he is such a better host than Jay Leno. I don't care. He's better. Anyway. Well, there's actually a piece of news stuff here that I want to mention. It's about a massage therapist named Paul Ingraham. And Paul writes extensively about the treatment of pain problems from a skeptical viewpoint. He interprets the available scientific evidence and makes recommendations about various therapies to his readers. He is critical of many common practices in his own profession, in chiropractic and in physiotherapy. And recently, he wrote an article called Does Chiropractic Work? It's a well-thought-out and reasoned article in which Paul goes over the history of chiropractic and cites with clear footnotes and references some of the criticisms and claims made over the years. His main goal is asking questions and starting some scientific discourse. And he admits he isn't an expert on chiropractic, but is curious and asking questions. And that's what skepticism in science is all about.
I should also point out, if you go to his website, which we'll list later, he covers more than the chiropractic with this other thing. There are other things about natural medicine and such things. So it's a well breadth of a blog, although it does have a specific focus in certain areas.
Yeah, he does give a lot of really good advice when it comes to just dealing with pain and various options available to the consumer out there, and you know what they should trust and what they shouldn't trust. However, inspired by complaints from chiropractors, the College of Massage Therapists of BC, which is Paul's professional regulator, is investigating Paul's publishing efforts, alleging that his criticisms of alternative healthcare constitute professional misconduct. The consequences for Paul could be quite extreme, both professionally and financially. Now, if this story sounds familiar, it's because in Great Britain, a science journalist named Simon Singh is being sued by the British Chiropractic Association for an article he wrote because he also took a skeptical stance on chiropractic.
Does this mean that, you know, if you try and criticize a medical profession that you're in danger of? I mean, are we in danger when we've criticized them?
Interesting enough, the British system, legal system, is actually very poorly designed in that we could actually be sued by British chiropractors.
But the one in England, that was libel, was it? As opposed to this is more professional misconduct?
Yeah, it's a slightly different situation, but it is very similar in the sense that you have these organizations that are targeting someone for essentially asking questions.
Why would they do that?
Well, okay, now in my opinion on this, I think this is an effort at intimidation. I think they're trying to say, if you mess with us, we're going to, you know, come after you.
Sort of a lowball pushback.
That's what I think. Obviously, Paul can't talk about the situation, but in my opinion as a skeptic, it has a lot of parallels to the situation with Simon Singh. And the skeptical community has really rallied around Simon because he's doing a very, you know, brave thing, taking on a multi-million dollar industry to defend freedom of speech and scientific curiosity.
Exactly. And let's not forget the social service he does, right? I mean, a lot of people, especially in the Western, praise the whole idea of freedom of the press and the ability to question authority. And this seems to be what Singh is doing. And from what I understand of the case, it's not like he's out there and he says, Joe Smith, this isn't a real Joe Smith, Joe Smith, he's a bastard and he drinks too much and he fornicates or something. No, it's like, well, here's something. This is what the research says. Take your own opinion from this. I believe this, right?
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, like, Simon Singh didn't actually go out there and say, you know, chiropractic is wrong and they're trying to bamboozle the public. He basically said, you know, some very well-known facts about chiropractic. And instead of saying, okay, you're wrong, Simon, and here's our evidence, the British chiropractor said, we're taking you to court. Like, it, you know...
It seems almost like a cheesy thing that they tried to do with smoking, they tried to do with the carbon cabal, if I can use that term. Sure. Or they sit there and you have scientific evidence that proves smoking's bad for your health, for example. So one thing they can try and do is they can try and attack the messenger, which is what the chiropractor seems to do with Singh. The other thing they can do is they can try and come up with scientific evidence to prove the difference. The only problem is that it requires a lot of money. Tobacco companies, oil companies have lots of money. I guess chiropractory, although it seems to be expensive, doesn't actually pay all that much, and they can't afford this counter science. They can only afford to actually kill the messenger.
Yeah. Well, it's a good time to point out that Paul's website, www.saveyourself.ca, has been vetted by many medical skeptics, including Harriet Hall is one of the big names. I find it to be a rich source of information. And there's nothing on there that I find unprofessional or, I would say, lowball attacks on chiropractic practices. In fact, this site reminds me a lot of Quackwatch, which we've mentioned before is a great resource for anyone out there who wants to find out if a medical treatment is considered safe and scientifically sound.
Should be noted, though, this is also his business site, is it not? When I went there, I remember he's got tutorials and that deal specifically with his profession.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, obviously, we can't say too much about this, but it is a local case, and we wish Paul the best of luck with that.
And I should point out that we actually would like to be a focus point or a vocal point for anyone out there who has skeptical issues that deal specifically with Vancouver. To the best of our knowledge, we are Vancouver's only skeptical radio show, and we want to help support the community. So if you have any show ideas, if there's anything you know about or anything you'd like to be investigated, again, contact our email. What's our email again?
radio.freethinker@gmail.com.
I'm so terrible at remembering those things.
But it's a good point, though, Don. We do want people to use us as a resource. We're here to help. And if you notice something in the paper, you read a fishy article, or you just hear something that just doesn't sound right, let us know, because maybe we can help you with that.
Or if you've gone to these shows, you know, this one person who sent us the email about the woo-woo convention.
Yeah, definitely. You know? We're here to help people. Okay, well, why don't we take a commercial break, and we'll be back, and we're going to revisit organic food. So, tune in. I know a place to go.
Sunday, August 2nd at noon, the Vancouver Pride Parade starts downtown at Robson and Thurlow. Showcasing Canada's proud diversity, Vancouver's Pride Parade ran 500,000 strong last year. Join the celebration as we support the LGBT community worldwide. Parade entries are full, but find your spot to watch at vancouverpride.ca. Festival events run all week. I know a place to go when things are getting low.
Welcome back. So, Don, we're going to revisit organic food. What can you tell us about it?
Well, if everyone knows, a couple of shows ago, we did organic food, and we kind of had it from multiple different angles. And I thought it might be good to revisit it and actually look at the idea of what is organic or natural food. Now, normally, I mean, the whole idea of organic food, the very gross thing is that there is a legal definition, and we've talked a little bit about the legal definition before, so we're going to avoid that. We're going to go with a common sense idea of what organic food is. Now, for those chemists out there, they know that actually a lot of food that we eat is actually inorganic, or at least a portion of it. Salt, for example, or sodium bicarbonate, which is used for leavened bread. There's also the idea that, you know, there are chemical preservatives and food coloring and all that. Well, those things we're not going to deal with, because usually when you talk about organic food, you're referring to the actual meat, the actual wheat crop or the beef or whatever, the actual root of grown food. So one of the areas that, organic foods can be defined on is based on genetic or non-genetically modified food. Of course, that leads into the big question is what qualifies as genetically modified? Evolution is itself a big experiment in modifying genes, right? I mean, animals have evolved over the history of time. So really, everything is kind of genetically modified.
We're in a constant state of genetic modification. That's part of evolution. I think what people often refer to with GM's food is human-modified products. But even that is kind of squirrely because we've been doing that for ages. We've been crossbreeding agriculture. We've been producing seedless fruit, for instance.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things in archaeology is to find out when things like wheat was domesticated. And they can actually tell because there was a genetic modification that changed what natural wheat was into what we call domesticated wheat, right? Now, some people might say, well, okay, but even domesticated wheat, at least in theory, can breed. So, I mean, it's still natural in that sense. But then, of course, you get things like a mule, which is a cross between a donkey and a horse, which is an infertile animal. Or seedless grapes. How does a seedless grape not
exactly,
right?
Yeah. You know?
So, and even weird things, doing my research, I discovered a thing which I'd love to find called a grapple, which apparently is a natural, as in non-modified in a lab, which I'll get into later, organism crossed between a grape and an apple. But as I mentioned, so some people say, okay, well, those are all still natural because they could occur outside in the wild, so to speak, in theory. So genetically modified means, well, in a lab. Where in a lab, they actually open up a cell and they put a little gene from one animal into another animal. One of the famous ones, I think, is where they take a gene from a fish and they put it in tomatoes to make it resistant to frost. And so they say, well, you know, there, that's unnatural and you're going to create some kind of horrible thing with that. But of course, that overlooks the idea that even that kind of genetic modification are using bits and pieces from nature. I mean, we're not quite at the point yet where we can actually create from scratch DNA. So the genes for the tomato came from a fish. Fish is a natural animal. Tomato is a natural animal. In essence, you can argue that's still natural. And once you've introduced the gene, the tomato has to grow. It's still a biological entity. And if you mess it up too much, you don't get a living creature. So, but again, most people worry that if you do create this, you're going to create something that's going to kill people or whatever, right? You know, this tomato will actually poison a large part of the population. Well, nature does that, called hemlock or, you know, death's head mushroom. You know, there's lots of things in nature that will kill you too. The idea is really regulation over genetically modified food.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've been kind of dancing around the issue. Is, like, quote unquote, organic food safer? I mean, seriously, like, if you're going to say, okay, I don't want my food to be grown with pesticides or fertilizers, okay, fine. But do you want them to stop, like, cleaning your fruit, too? Do you want them to take out all the antibiotics that keep away, like, bacteria, like, salmonella and stuff? I mean, seriously, like, the notion that just because your food is grown not in a big corporation but on some farmer's backyard makes it safer or better for you.
Well, actually, Ethan, you're getting into a whole different area. But we'll go back to the root of your question, which is an apple, right? Whether it's an organic apple, however you define it, or not organic, is still just an apple. The things in the apple itself, are just the same. So you might say that something on the apple, the wax that they sometimes put in apples, might be harmful to you, but the apple itself is no better for you. So organic food isn't necessarily better for you. You might argue that some of the things in commercial farming might be worse, but they're not like miracle foods.
No, you're not going to like live 20 years longer because you only ate organic apples.
Exactly.
Maybe they taste better.
Well, but even, no, they wouldn't even really do that necessarily. Because, I mean, again, it's still an apple. You know,
right.
Once you peel off the skin, it's the same.
Yeah.
But you hinted there when you said, you know, a farmer in his backyard. Well, that's another thing that gets confused with organic food. Organic food is the idea that it's food grown sustainably, or then there's not a lot of inputs into it. So it's grown as nature would have it. And, you know, one of the funny things is they think that supports local farmers. But one of the biggest producers, well, the biggest producers of organic foods are the big international food companies. They're cashing in on this whole idea of organic because they know they can charge twice as much for almost the same product. Even if it does cost a little bit more for the produce, they still mass farm it in these big things. They might not use herbicides or pesticides, which keeps with the spirit of the sustainable or non-input aspect of organic, but it's still a mega corporations. And what you're doing there is you've missed, you know, one of the big things. People are doing it because they think it's anti-corporate. Well, sure. And, you know, everyone knows me. I'm far left, and I think corporations are evil. And I'm all for supporting small business type ideas. But that has nothing to do with the food. You know, whether a food is grown by a big corporation or a small farmer, an apple, again, is an apple.
Exactly. It's just the sticker on the apple changes a little bit.
Well, and the price. If anyone goes to a market, especially if you go to one of these trendy markets out there, like rhymes with Boyce's and and Paspers, and you look at their organic food and you go, who can afford this? And I mean, it's people who are buying trendy stuff. It sounds good. They believe in the hype, but in itself, it's not. One of the other aspects of it, too, is the whole idea of local. Anyone who's listened to Skeptoid, who's another podcaster, not nearly as good as us, so don't bother listening to him, listen to us instead, did a thing about organic foods. And one of the things that came up on him was the idea that local food, the 100-mile diet, which is a big thing, right? Well, one of the things they say about that is it saves on transporting goods long distances. So apples that are grown in China are shipped to Vancouver instead of growing in the Okanagan Valley and driven here. And that the energy requirements for that, the amount of gasoline you use, is significantly less, or that's the claim. But when you actually do research into this, because it's big corporation, they're bulk, they're sending by ocean travel, which for some odd reason is incredibly cheap, it actually works out that buying locally from a bunch of small little farmers who take a bushel at a time in their truck, drive into town 4 times a week, burns so much more gasoline than it would be if you had one semi coming from Mexico.
Yeah, I used to work in a grocery store, and people would line up to get our oranges from California or fruit from an exotic place because they want to have something that was grown somewhere else. They think it tastes better if it was made somewhere else. That's perfectly understandable, too.
Well, that's actually another thing, too, is a lot of people, I mean, Vancouver's actually kind of blessed. You can grow a lot of stuff in Vancouver that you know, in theory, you could do the 100-mile diet and it wouldn't affect a lot. You go back a long time ago, things like bananas. You know, nobody had a banana. Oranges are given away at Christmas. A lot of the reason why they're given away at Christmas, because you go back, again, 100, 200 years ago, oranges were very rare. It was a very special thing to have an orange because they could only grow in certain parts of the world and it was so hard to transport them. Today, we live in a world of plenty. At least a significant number of us live in a world of plenty.
Well, actually, a significant minority of us actually live in a world of plenty when you factor in the world population.
Thank you. I'm gradually converting him to the socialist ways. I have to leave little hooks in there for him to grab onto.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it's funny, though, Don, because one of the side effects, though, is medical science. Scurvy was such a huge killer because access to oranges, for instance, was so limited, vitamin C. And the more we can bring in different types of food, generally speaking, the quality of life increases.
Well, no, and let's go with the genetically modified food or chemically enhanced, you know, through the use of fertilizer or whatever, right? What does that mean in real terms? Well, it means a lot more people have access to food. And as you just pointed out earlier, a minority of the people of this world have plenty. The majority are suffering either through malnutrition or at least limited availability of good quality food. And what genetically modified food, what chemically enhanced food can do, if done properly, is feed the multitude. One of the big problems we have is, one, it's unregulated or poorly regulated. So you get a lot of instances where bad things will be done, bad chemicals, poor washing. We had the spinach and lettuce in the States, which quite often is infected with disease, right? But that's a regulatory issue. There's nothing inherently wrong with the process as long as the process is properly done. So yeah, no, so it gives you a great opportunity to provide food for the world if you get past, you know, the first steps.
Right. Well, hopefully our listeners who have some interesting tales of eating organic will write into us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com.
It's the third time
I've mentioned that, so please do so I can stop saying it.
you don't think organic food will be a hot-button issue, do you think?
Oh, I don't think so.
No, nobody
believes that. It's not a big issue here in Vancouver.
Not even in the skeptic community.
Well, we're right out of time, so Don, can you give us a skeptical quote to end the show?
I do. This comes from Francis Crick, who we mentioned before, DNA fame. Christianity may be okay between consenting adults in the privacy of their home, but should not be taught to young children.
Well, that seems pretty reasonable right
there. It does.
Well, so we're out of time, so thanks for joining us, everybody. This is Ethan, your free-thinking historian, saying goodnight.
This is Don, eyes open, minds on.
So long, everybody.
Bye.
Walking alone at night can be scary!
Stop right there, student. Why walk alone when you can call SafeWalk? The safety and comfort of everyone on campus is important. That's why we're here.
SafeWalk is a free, student-run foot patrol service with two-person co-ed teams that will meet you and accompany you anywhere on campus to make sure you get there safely.
Keep an eye out for our bright red reflective jackets and signature foot logo, and let your next walk be with us.
What a huge relief! Now I'll never have to worry about the terrors that could happen when walking through such a big campus at night.
For a walk, you can call 604-822-5355